Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono.
You don't have anything. You can't escape. Take the sack, live to play another down, and move on.
49ers Extra is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Coming up, we'll talk about the 49ers' big win in New Orleans with Steve, and we're going to hear from Greg Papa, the voice of the 49ers. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. TPC Harding Park in San Francisco is the home of the 2020 PGA Championship, and you will not want to miss this event. It's right around the corner now. Daily and weekly ticket options are available from opening day, that's May the 11th, to Championship Sunday, May the 17th, 2020, for the PGA Championship at San Francisco's very own TPC Harding Park. So check out a major in San Francisco. Go to the website, attend.thepga.com/tickets to purchase your tickets today.
49ers have no yards rushing so far on two carries. Here's a play action to Kittle. Garoppolo looking for a deep ball. Going to throw one down the middle for Emmanuel Sanders. He's got it. He was knocked out. He can get up and run. He may have been touchdown. Breaks a tackle. 10, 5, touchdown, San Francisco. Here's your football game. High snap. Wisnowski got it down. Robbie Gould's kick is good. The New Orleans Saints.
What a game. What a call right there. Great calls throughout. And Greg Papa joins us here on 49ers Extra. Greg, that must have been so exciting to watch a game like that. And you had to have a lot of energy to get through the noise level that you were trying to broadcast through.
Yeah, it was an epic game, Joe. And it was one of the very best football games I've ever seen or called. I know you and your crew, Greg and Trent, worked the Raiders game against Titans, and I, you know, when Steve McNair was going off, and I remember a lot of epic games with those guys, and in particular, the AFC Championship game and Rich Gannon's naked bootleg and 14 blasts at Crockett to win that game. So that was very high on the list. We also had a game in New Orleans when Jack Del Rio was the coach of the Raiders, and he went for a two-point conversion to Michael Crabtree at the end of the game to win by a point over Drew Brees. And later that year, Derek Carr, again to Michael Crabtree on several plays at the goal line, beat Kansas City, which was an amazing game. But this one, when you also look at the importance of the game and what this means, you're looking at two 10-2 teams, and that could be ultimately what decide where the NFC Championship game is played on January the 19th. That game was just epic, and it may have been, in fact, the best game I've ever called as far as just the excitement level, the importance. And then when you factor in, there was no ramp-up to the game. It started right away. When New Orleans got the ball right away, they went down the field and scored. 49ers came right back and scored. They went down and scored it. It was like watching a tennis match, and who's going to break serve here? And it was that good of a game. I mean, you know, they have almost 1,000 yards and 48-46, and wow, that was a great game.
I guess if you love defense, it wasn't your game. But if you like to see two coaches really going at it and, you know, breaking out all the trick plays in their bag, this was a game for you. And I was talking to Steve Bono about this, about how, you know, there's a lot of risk in those plays. I mean, there's risk versus reward, but it ends up working out. And you hear a soundbite that I did, I think it was on KMBR, that I heard from Emmanuel Sanders talking about how when he ran that play in practice, at one point he threw just a duck, and it wasn't a good pass. But this time he threw a good pass to a wide open Mostert for that touchdown. So it pays off sometimes when you have those trick plays.
And they actually saw that play. And it's amazing how they look at everything. You know, they not only watch their own games week to week and the opponents, but they get different plays. It's called clips from around the NFL. And the Buffalo Bills ran that exact same play on Thanksgiving Day to beat the Dallas Cowboys. And that's where the 49ers saw it. But it was, Yeah, you're right. There was some defense sprinkled in. I mean, I think an underrated aspect was the 49ers getting a turnover deep in their territory when DJ Jones punched the ball out.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a recovery by DeForest Buckner. And then, you know, twice New Orleans went for two-point conversions and missed them both. And Fred Warner, who overall had a hard game on Sunday, stopped the first one to Taysom Hill. So this was a lot like the Chiefs-Rams game last year on Monday Night Football that wound up 54-51. And in that game, there were some big defensive plays to win that game, defensive scores. But the point you made about the two coaches, when you just saw two expert play designers and then have their team be coached so well to be able to execute it on game day, to watch Kyle Shanahan against Sean Payton. And there were even some plays that Kyle took from Sean Payton, like the fullback down the line option that Kyle Juszczyk ran. I've seen Zach Lyon of the New Orleans Saints, their fullback, who actually missed the game Sunday with a knee injury. But I've seen him do that several times. So they stole that play. And then obviously the Emmanuel Sanders pass. There was using Richie James Jr. in a wildcat, a direct snap down on the 5-yard line. And they thought of that when Richie James Jr. ran the scout team the week before to get ready for Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. So, yeah, I mean, it was Drew Brees against Jimmy Garoppolo as far as the execution and two quarterbacks at the highest level. But it was, the point you made, I think, is the most salient. Just those two head coaches and how good they are offensively going back and forth. And it almost like a tennis match. And it was all, we all kept saying it and feeling it, and it turned out to be true. Whoever got their hands on the football last was going to win the game.
Yeah, and it turns out that it was just an incredible play there by George Kittle on 4th and 2. And just the way that he was, acting like, I was calling him a rodeo bulldogger, like, you know, where you're kind of the steer wrestler in rodeo. That's what it looked like to me. And Marcus Williams, it was almost as if he wasn't even trying to hide the fact that he was face masking. I mean, he just kept his hand in on the helmet like, you know, I don't care. I'm face masking, but I'm somehow going to get this guy down. And it just wasn't working out.
You know, very, very simply, Joe, I think it's one of the greatest regular season plays in the history of 49er football. And they've had, obviously, the catch and the catch two and John Taylor, which everybody overlooks, caught a pass to win something called the Super Bowl. But, I mean, you take the postseason out of it. But the regular season, when you look at the importance of that play, 4th down and 2, if he drops the ball or if Jimmy doesn't put it on the outside thigh pad, you lose the game. But where Jimmy put it, allowing George to catch and turn, Bill Walsh would have loved that ball placement. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, their safety and slot corner, came over and just fell down, you know, going for the ball. And then George had all that running room to go. But I didn't know. So our broadcast location is high at the Superdome, and it's on the New Orleans sideline, so it all happened on that sideline. And I couldn't see Marcus Williams grabbing for the face mask, but I saw – was George, and if you look at it, George does kind of throw, I'm not going to say a punch, but he does extend his right hand, and he gets Marcus Williams, number 43, right on the side of his Florida DeLee logo on the helmet. And then I saw George drop his head and kind of headbutt him back, and it was in response to what Williams was doing, which I couldn't see, was with a face mask. So initially when I made the call, in fact, my call was, what did George do? I didn't know. It was a personal foul going one way. I didn't know which way it was going or if it would be offsetting. But Marcus Williams, and he's the guy, Joe, when you look back at the Minneapolis Miracle, Stephon Diggs made the catch, but it was Marcus Williams, number 43, who I think made the worst defensive play, I would say, in the history of the NFL. It was that bad of a play where he had the sideline to push him out of bounds. And Williams has become a really good safety. His instincts playing center field and free safety have been really good. I mean, he had 4 interceptions coming into the game on Sunday, and I saw him just instinctively go break on the ball a lot, so I think he's dramatically improved. But here he is again. I mean, Joe, he had the sideline right there. He did not need to, you know, try to rodeo cowboy back at him. All he had to do was get on the side of Kittle and push him out of bounds.
Yeah.
So why he had to man up there and make and just use the sideline as an extra defender and push him out was the play there. So that was just a bad play. And then George took advantage of it. And that got you closer. Could Robbie go make a 50-yard field goal if the way his coming back and all the misses and where his mind's at. You know, make a 30-yarder. We know we could do that. But if he had to line it up and kick that thing from 45 or 50, it may not have gone through.
Right. All right, I want to finish up by talking about you a little bit. First of all, the call, touchdown San Francisco. How did you come up with that? You know, I mean, you know, I guess the call that most announcers have used is touchdown 49ers. But, I mean, this is really something that people are loving. What kind of reaction did you get to it, and are you getting?
You know, it's hard for me to say. Everybody's nice to me, and they say it to my face. I'm sure some people don't like it, but I went back and forth throughout most of the offseason. When I was hired as the new radio voice of the 49ers in January of 2019, I obviously thought about it because people make such a big deal about the touchdown Raiders. And I never really had that call until much later on. It just came, and it was my tribute to Bill King.
Uh-huh.
But when I did baseball, I never had a signature home run call. I never had one in basketball or any of the sports because everything was different. You know, every call was different. You just call it differently. But in a touchdown, after you make the call, there's a finality to the play where you can give it a special call. And it's just touchdowns are what the game is all about. And Al Davis taught me that we don't want first downs here. We want touchdowns. Touchdowns score. That's how you win. So to me, it was like the goal in hockey or the goal in soccer.
Right.
And it was a little bit like, you know, Anders Kanter, the great soccer announcer, and how long he held it. So that's where the touchdown Raiders came. So anyway, with this call, I listened to all the 49er announcers throughout history, going back to Bob Fouts. And when I first got here, Don Klein, it was a very elegant voice called Niners games. And then later, obviously, Lon Simmons and Joe Starkey and Ted, Bob Fouts. I think I mentioned Bob, all of them. I listened to them all. And the one that caught me was Don Klein and the way he inflected up. And Joe Starkey would do it occasionally, but Don did it all the time where it was, touchdown 49ers! And that, right. that was going to be the call. But then when I got closer to it and I decided just to play with it, you know, in my garage or outside or in the car or something, because of how long I give the touchdown bellow, Joe, it was hard. I didn't have enough wind, even though I'm the biggest windbag out there. I didn't have enough to go, you know, touchdown, 49er! You know, it just didn't work. So I was struggling with it, and then I didn't do it in the preseason at all. And a couple of the games were on TV, and it didn't work on TV. And I was going to break it out for the first game. But then, week three of the preseason, we're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. And I heard my friend Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs, and he's got that great touchdown,
yeah.
Kansas City.
That's a great call, yep.
I thought, whoa, now wait, hold on here. I can do three syllables. And I think it's important now that they're in Santa Clara that people remember that they are the San Francisco 49ers. And maybe not when they were playing a Candlestick as much, but I think it's we don't call them San Francisco throughout the game. It's first down 49ers. But I do hear, you know, if Greg's doing the game, Greg Gumbel, you work with, doing a 49ers game, he may say touchdown San Francisco. So I think it's just a lot of reasons. Plus, I lost my dad on July 30th, right before the start of the year, and his name is Frank. And that is the name of the city, right?
Yeah.
Sir Francis of Assisi.
Right.
Is who it's named after. So for a lot of reasons. And I checked with Al Guido and Jed York, and they all gave me the thumbs up emoji when we texted about it. They liked it. And so I just came to that. I could execute it easier just with San Francisco, and I can play with it a little bit. And a lot of reasons, you know, the fact that they are the San Francisco 49ers. They're the Bay Area's first team, came here in 46, never left the Bay Area, unlike the Warriors and A's and you know, Giants moved here. This team was founded here. They are the San Francisco 49ers. And on top of it, to honor my dad, it just made a lot of sense to me.
And you and your partner, Tim Ryan, generally followed up with "Feels great, baby," referencing Jimmy Garoppolo and, you know, his interview that he had with Aaron Andrews, which was funny. And somebody, you know, might point out, oh, wait, is that controversial? But no, it's turned into this this fun thing.
Well, and then so we in the preseason, we didn't use the call. I didn't use the call. And I honestly didn't know exactly what I was going to do. I think the last preseason game, though, we played with it on TV. And when you're doing the game on TV, it just sounds silly to be screaming that long. TV, as you know, and you're working with the great. And I think the reason Greg Gumbel is so great is he's understated. And you don't do that on television, right?
Right,
so
right.
I wasn't going to do it on television. But at the end of the last preseason game, Tim and I concocted this thing where we were to come up with a touchdown call. And what we did was, Tim Ryan does this amazing, he's got great use of his voice. He's just a great vocal stylings of Tim Ryan. So he will play and do that foghorn, you know, when they score a touchdown, right. You hear the foghorn. And Tim can duplicate it exactly correct. So the last preseason game, I'm telling the audience, all right, now I'm going to try out this new touchdown call. And here we go, and we'll see how it goes. And they score. And then I go, touchdown! And then right after that, Tim jumps in and just nails the foghorn sound. So it was hilarious. But that was not going to be the call. But it was a way to involve Tim in the call. So with the Garoppolo thing, you know, after Feels Great Baby with the interview with Aaron Andrews and all that on the Fox show, the Thursday night, you know, whatever game that was, Arizona, I guess, the Thursday night game. I said, you know, Tim, you know, after I get the touchdown call, give it a Feels Great Baby for Garoppolo. And then it's just become his signature, and it sounds great. And then when we didn't have Tim, he wasn't with me in New Orleans, and Dennis Brown did a great job. You know, I bellowed out after a couple of touchdowns in honor of Tim and the whole thing. Feels Great Baby. So it's kind of touchdown, San Francisco, Feels Great Baby, and now we're a combo platter. So it works great.
And you guys have developed a great chemistry, and I'm sure a really good friendship. And so the suspension, I'm just curious, you know, how you reacted to that after he had those comments on Lamar Jackson on the morning show that really backfired on him, and I'm sure that was a real lesson learned for Tim Ryan.
It was unfortunate, and you know, he offended a great number of people, and you can't make offensive remarks. Tim is a tremendous broadcaster. I honestly think, Joe, and you got Trent Green in your booth, and there are a lot of guys that teach me a lot of football, but Tim is so passionate about the 49ers. He's around this team so much, and his level of detail. I mean, how many announcers would even get into that level of detail? And, now, that may have been told by a coach to a player, may have shown up on a scouting report, but it speaks to Tim's due diligence in preparing. But he paid the ultimate price. I mean, he missed one of the greatest football games ever. I mean, when he looks back on the 49ers 2019, and maybe that's the game of the year, he didn't get a chance to broadcast that game. So yeah. That was a very stiff penalty, but I think it was warranted. Word choice in our business is so important, and you can't offend people. But he'll come back Sunday against the Falcons as strong as ever. I love the guy. He taught me so much football when he was doing NFL radio with Pat Kerwin. I would sit in my car and be late to movies. You know, I think I can miss the preview here and still make the start of the feature. But I got five more minutes. I can't miss this. They're teaching me how to run an over under defense. So I got to learn here. I got a notepad out. So Tim has taught me so much football, and then being around him. You know how much I love all the game. You know, I love every sport, but I love football, and I want to learn as much about it as I can. And Tim Ryan teaches me so much football on the air, off the air, traveling. We sit together next on the charter, and I just love the guy. So I hope we have a chance to work together for as long as we're walking the earth together.
Me too. Okay, last thing, and this is an interesting one here. I don't know how you're going to answer this, but, you know, growing up in the Bay Area and being a 49ers fan as I am, you know, and any team really, especially I think baseball, the announcers are just so synonymous with the team. It's just, you know, you relate to that announcer, they're tied to the team. Well, you were with the Raiders for so long, but I have to give you credit. You come over to the 49ers and it's just a seamless transition where you're making these calls. And I think for 49ers fans, they're getting goosebumps when they hear you make that call. And it's your first year calling the team. So was there any concern? What did you feel was going to be the reaction to a guy who was known as being the Raiders' voice coming over to the 49ers?
Oh, it's something I thought about, and Bob Sargent, who hired me, and Al Guido and Jed York, I mean, we all thought about it. But and Bob, and I was concerned about it, but Bob's point was, you're the one guy that can pull it off. You know, I went through this to some degree with the A's when I went over to the Giants. I think back then it was even more difficult. I think, you know, the A's fans were upset with me, and Giants fans, I don't know if they ever quite embraced me with that, and it was hard. But this time around, I think it was easier for several factors. And I'm sure the Raiders fans are not pleased with it. And I'm sure there's some 49er fans that are not pleased with me doing the 49er games. I'm sure that is. But Bob Sargent's point, and I kind of felt it, you know, the one year that I did not do radio and I was not doing Raiders or 49ers, I was working on 49ers pregame and postgame live for NBC Sports Bay Area, and you worked there as well, so you know. And I you know, just being around Levi's and interacting with the faithful, it was so easy. And the bottom line is, Joe, and Bob Sargent's point was, they know you. And it's not like you're just coming in from out of the market, or the only team you ever did was the Raiders. You've done them all. In fact, I got hanging in my office here as I'm talking with you, I'm looking at it. The 49ers gave me a 49er jersey with the number 5. And the significance of that, I'm not going to play quarterback like Jeff Garcia did, but the significance of that is I'm the only person, and partly because I've lost jobs, but it's also significant. I'm the only one to do both Bay Area baseball teams, both Bay Area football teams, and the Warriors.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah.
Other guys have done 4, but I'm the only one that has done both Bay Area football teams. And it was significant to Bob, and I got, you know, John Lynch signed it, and Kyle Shanahan signed it, and Jed York signed it, and Al Guido signed it, and it's amazing. And the thing was, you know, I've been able to pull off the Big 5, and the Sharks are big as well. But you're talking, you know, the 3 main sports, certainly in this marketplace, that I'd worked here, and they heard me do the Warriors for so long, and they heard me do the A's for so long, and the Giants for so long. And, you know, yeah, I did the Raiders for a long time, but I guess in some respects I'm the, I don't want to say, you know, the voice of Bay Area sports, because, you know, John Miller's working, and there's some great, Joy Ain and Ted Robinson, and but I have done a lot of a cross-section of Bay Area teams. So I think that is what made it, if you want to use the word seamless, I don't know. Whatever comes out of my lips is the same. It's just how people interpret it in their ears that is going to be the ultimate perception of it. But yeah, I would say overall it's been a seamless year. But I think because I've worked so long in the market and done all these different teams, the 49er fans have been able to accept me. Plus, let's face it, it's a pretty damn good football team. And I'm bringing them nothing but good news every week. So they've been, you know, once they start to lose a few big games, hopefully they won't, but then they'll blame that on me. But the fact that I'm, you know, bringing them great news every Sunday has made it a lot easier as well.
Yeah, it's been a great season. Thank you so much for the time. And the great news for everybody who really loves Greg is that he's on all over the place. He's on KNBR in the midday with John Lund, and he's on the Warriors pregame and postgame shows on NBC Sports Bay Area and the 49ers radio broadcast. So you are one busy man, so I really appreciate
it. And the Giants pre and post, which comes up
in the spring. Yeah. So yeah. I really appreciate the time, Greg. I know you're really busy and look forward to seeing you soon.
No, anything for you, Joe. You've been a great friend and an ally all these years, and someone that we've been, you know, taking confidence in. You've helped me. I've helped you over the years, and we'll continue to do that for forever and ever. So thank you, my friend, for asking me to come on with you.
That's the voice of the San Francisco 49ers, Greg Papa. Coming up, we'll have our regular chat with Steve Bono, former 49ers quarterback, will join us to talk about the Saints game after this from TPC Harding Park. 49ers fans from outside the Bay Area, listen up. TPC Harding Park has a great deal for you when you are planning your trip to Levi's Stadium to see the 49ers. While you're in town, take advantage of Golf the Gridiron, featuring discounted tee times and free club rentals. Visit tpc.com and click on special offers for tee time deals at San Francisco's own TPC Harding Park. Well, Steve, it was a wildly entertaining game in New Orleans on Sunday, and the 49ers pull it out. I mean, really, one of the most exciting games that I know that I've ever seen in my life. I know I've never seen a first half like that, where you had the 49ers leading 28-27 at the half, and then it just kept going where it was still really exciting in the second half. So, I mean, just overall, what an incredible game with a lot at stake.
It was an awesome game. I know that it was, you know, like close to 1,000 yards in offense.
Yeah.
whatever it ended up being. What's that? I'm just quick math. I hadn't thought about it. 91 points. Is that right?
94 points.
That's right. It was 48-46. Yeah. I was thinking it was 46-45. Anyway. What a game. I had a feeling that it was going to be a high scoring game. you know, just fast track, you know, no elements, 70 degrees. Obviously two good defenses, but also two really good offenses. God, it was fun. It was fun to watch. It was fun to be a fan. It would have been even more fun to play in it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's really tough with that noise too, of course.
Oh yeah.
In the dome.
Probably the hardest place I've ever played. That's for sure. I mean, I haven't played in, you know, some of the new places, but, in my day, it was definitely the hardest place to play. And I mean, you could see it with, you know, Jimmy G holding his hands over his ear holes just to be able to hear the microphone in his helmet.
Must have been really tough.
Speakers.
One of the other parts that was intriguing was just the fact that you have Kyle Shanahan against Sean Payton and how creative these guys are on offense.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's just some great plays. Obviously, the reverse pass, which was a hell of a throw. The counter option, I'm going to call it, with Juszczyk pitching and taking a shot.
Oh, man, yes. He got creamed.
Oh, my God.
He got creamed.
That one hurt. He needed a little homer drill for that one. We needed to coach him up on that one a little bit.
He took in the game, by the way.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, I'm glad he didn't. I mean, he didn't get hurt. I mean, he's probably was a little sore today, for sure. But I know the Dean Lombardo, you know, gave the description of why it was a penalty. I don't know. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, it's so hard to avoid targeting somebody in the head when they're coming down. They're falling
down.
They're
coming down, and the other guy's going
it's
down.
Really
yeah,
tough.
Yeah,
I understand it's, that, it's what hard. You're saying, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, what a fun game to be a fan of and to be able to watch. Yeah, and thank God that the team we're rooting for came out on top.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Emmanuel Sanders, the first 49ers player ever to throw for a touchdown and catch one in the same game. And, you know, that.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. First 49ers player ever to do that.
I would have guessed John Taylor.
Because he could throw the ball? Maybe,
only
yeah, he
only because
didn't have
he, could, he could throw it. And, you know, he's you know, in the back in the day, my guess is he was going to have pretty much a touchdown every game.
Well, I want to talk more about that play too. And it was funny because Shanahan broke out all these trick plays, and there's a lot of risk involved sometimes. I mean, it's great when it works, but I heard Emmanuel Sanders talking about the play after the game, saying that one of the times in practice when they ran it, he threw a duck and it was terrible. Like, I mean, there's no way it was going to be a completion. Now you got Mostert.
And coaches usually see that and like, nah, we're not going to do that.
Oh, and you know, Mostert's wide open, but I'm sure you had practices where you had a position, you know, another position player make a throw like that, like a wide receiver. I mean, I would think it's pretty hard to execute that in the game when you're not a quarterback. You don't throw the ball that much.
Yeah. Any, no, they don't. And obviously he knows how to throw the ball pretty well because he's off balance and he throws a spiral on the money. So, you know, a lot of those, to your point, a lot of those things, they look great in practice and then they don't work in the game. And that's the risk you take. But there were 11 guys executing the same play and it worked.
Yeah. I mean, there was a wildcat play with Richie James that didn't work in the first half. That did not work.
And I hate the Wildcat. Just because there's no threat. There's only one threat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no throwing threat. I mean, it just, I mean, I get if the kid from New Orleans is back there, number seven. I mean, he's a quarterback, but he obviously runs really well and, as a big, strong kid, but otherwise, there's just, I don't know. I was never crazy about that because there's just no throwing threat.
Well, the creativity definitely was the order of the day.
Oh,
in
no
this
question.
Game. There's no question. So, yeah, I mean, obviously everybody's excited about what the 49ers offense did. But defensively, we hadn't seen anything like this because normally the 49ers defense, you know, they're top in the league. They're not going to give up this many points. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Drew Brees and company. They were just amazing.
Yeah, they were terrific. And he, you know, he knew the Niners pass rush was good. Their New Orleans offensive line played well. But Brees also knew that, you know, he had to hit his fifth step and get the ball out of his hands. And he did. He made some unreal throws. Some of those lofted, you know, kind of over the shoulder throws that he makes were spectacular.
And Michael Thomas,
Michael Thomas is unreal.
Yeah,
they do have great chemistry. Not to take away from anything that Jimmy G did because he was just as spectacular. But watching Brees make some of those throws is just it's pretty. You know, he's always got his feet underneath of him, and boy, he's good.
He's still great.
I thought he was good in college too. So
yeah. The first half, 49ers were averaging 16 yards a play, which is ridiculous. There were other stats that were coming out, like, you know, fewer incompletions than touchdowns, stuff like that. I mean, it was just crazy in that first half.
Yeah. Let me see. I think we ended up at like 9 yards of passing, 9 yards a play.
It's nuts.
I mean, rushing 6.8. So, I mean, you know, basically 8 yards a play.
Yeah. And Emmanuel Sanders, what a game. This guy has been so valuable. They pick him up. You know, you mentioned the throw. He had seven catches, 157 yards. He caught that long touchdown where, you know, the defender fell down, and then he ends up he falls down and doesn't get touched, and he just keeps going. Unbelievable 75-yard touchdown.
Unreal play on his part to, you know, to come back and play that ball and has the wherewithal that he's not been touched. To get up and run it in, it was terrific. His leadership and experience has shown obviously from day one.
Yeah, and all the receivers have gotten better. With the one play notwithstanding, where Sanders had the ball in his hands and then it popped down and became an interception, which was one of those INTs that you really don't give the don't give that blame to the quarterback, right?
No, and I think Sanders would be the first one to say I should have made that catch. It was a little out in front of him, but you know it went through both hands.
Yeah.
My guess is he'd be the first one to admit, I need to make that play.
Yeah.
He's been really good, and I know we've talked about it a few times that in the beginning of the year saying which one of these guys is going to step up and be the guy. Well. You know, other than Sanders and Debo and Kendrick have become the three guys.
Yeah, I mean, Bourne has improved a lot. I mean, you look at the blocking that he had in that game. There were good replays of him blocking. Much better hands. He's catching the ball now. He's not dropping it.
Yeah. I thought he improved drastically last year as well, and he's stayed on that trajectory of improvement, which is great. Great to see.
How about on the running side? And, this rushing attack is great, and it's been three-pronged all year. And it's interesting to think about now because Breida comes back after he was out for a few weeks. He had that long first run.
One for 16 or 19, whatever it was.
I think it was 28 yards, 28.
Was it that many?
Speed
kills on the turf.
Yeah, great speed there. And then you have Mostert, who now on a weekly basis is just showing up. Oh man!
Terrific.
So to me, To me, he's the number one back. I I know Coleman is capable and he's had some big games, but to me, I start Mostert. I have him in there most of the time. What do you think?
He deserves to be the starter in what he's done, especially in the last couple of weeks. I think it's worked really well with the different types of runs. As long as they can keep defenses from, figuring out what runs each guy is getting, what type of run, they're I think just their their styles are all so different that it keeps defenses off guard. But to go back and answer your question directly, I would say yes, Mostert has, I guess I'll say more of the, you know, or has more of the tools. You know, he's a little bit bigger. He may not be as quick as Breida, but open field speed, you know, is fast as anybody.
Yeah.
He seems to have a good feel for finding that little seam and being able to accelerate through it. But I just think that the three of them are keeping defenses so far off balance that they don't know what's hit them.
Yeah. He accelerates like a Tesla, by the way. You ever been in a Tesla?
Oof.
You know, where you just, I've been in one once.
And, quick.
Yeah, it's just like, boom, the thing just takes off. And that's the way he is.
Yeah.
New nickname for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to go through some of the keys in this game, because I go back to the first half, Steve, and the 2-point conversion that the Saints didn't get, that was huge. And the fact that they didn't really try to score at the end of the first half, I thought that was big too.
Yeah, so the 2-point, I mean, I get why he did it. I get why he went for it. There was a penalty.
Right, they were closer. You know,
you're a yard closer. I don't think the call was very good. I mean, glad he did it, because then he had to go for it. He had to do it again later in the game. Which was a great defensive play, which was one of the huge keys. The half, I'm trying to remember.
Here's the deal. 37 seconds remaining. I wrote this one down.
Yeah.
37
yeah.
seconds left. One timeout, and they called a draw. And then that was on first down. And then a little screen. It was just, it's kind of weird for the Saints the way they had been moving the ball.
The draw I get. I mean, that's kind of what I think we were talking about that last week. You kind of come out, you're on the draw, like, okay, maybe you hit him, which they kind of did. I mean, he gets 10 or 11 on the draw.
I think he got something like that. Yeah.
So now the screen on the next play, questionable, but he, after the draw, how much time was left? Was there? He probably should have called timeout, is my guess, if I remember correctly. But then the screenplay doesn't make any sense, because you need to pump the ball down the field a little bit to get some more yardage to at least try and get a field goal.
Yeah, he the clock ran down a lot after that draw. It went from 37 seconds to 13.
I don't think they used the timeout.
They didn't use it until 6 seconds. So it was just like, what are they doing?
And then he used it at 6 seconds. That didn't make any sense.
It didn't make sense. I didn't think so.
No, because then they run the ball again. He doesn't even take a knee. Breeze doesn't take a knee, if I remember correctly. They run the ball.
Right.
So, to end the half, which made zero sense.
Just,
because then you're putting the ball at risk of a fumble instead of just taking a knee. And when they didn't call timeout with 30 seconds, and try and hit a sideline route and, you know, pump, like I said, pump it down the field 15, 20 yards. And if you don't get it, then let the clock go. Because the starting play to me told me, okay, we're trying to get a field goal, at worst. But then they kind of veered off of that. They went away from that. Now, I don't know if you, I don't know if your next question was going to be about the end of the game.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Well, okay. I want the next thing I want to talk about was in the third quarter, DJ Jones forced a fumble by Kamara. That was, and by the way, that was the first lost fumble of the year for the Saints. That's hard to believe.
Was
and,
it really?
Yeah, it was. And the 49ers turned that into 7 points, which was huge because at that point they were down. But I love the plays that they ran. What'd you think of those misdirection where, you know, they're faking a run to the right and then they're throwing left to Juszczyk and then to Kittle eventually on the touchdown?
They were great. I mean, because the Saints defensive line, I thought put some pretty good pressure on Jimmy G, and the play action, the bootleg stuff really seemed to be working because typical dome team on defense, they can run, they can play sideline to sideline. Mm-hmm. That's just the way, you know, dome teams are built.
Right.
So bootlegs and play action things, movement stuff, usually works well.
And it did.
And, no, I mean, it was two plays, wasn't it?
It was two big plays there.
Two big plays. Yeah. The whole drive was only,
it might've been, yeah.
I think it was only two plays. If I remember correctly, but that was a huge turning point, the fumble, because we were down.
You're right. It was two plays because after the fumble, they only had to go 20 yards, I think. So
yeah.
They end up with just the two plays, but that was a big.
But we were down 13.
The first half, they were down that much. In the third quarter, at that point, they were down 30-28. So that was a big turning point, I thought, in the game, just to go up.
And okay, had we not scored just ahead of that?
That was this is the third quarter. So in the third quarter, was just to go ahead. But that was big. And then later, late in the third quarter, is really one of the big plays of this game too, when they did not have pass interference on the punt, the fake punt, and it came out that, and I don't know that you knew the rule. I know I didn't.
I knew it.
You knew it. Okay. I didn't know that rule
right
that you
away.
Can't have
like
pass
that,
interference
like that,
on a
you
punt
have
formation.
Pass interference on right. The punt. Yep.
So Tavarius Moore, I mean, I guess he knew the rule too, and he's just playing.
I was
on the outside, and he's just playing it perfectly within the rules.
Yeah, played it perfect. I was screaming at Peyton through the television, like, dude, there is no pass interference. Stop moaning. Yeah.
And then
might have been a few expletives in there, but
and then I listened to Mike Pereira, who was on KMBR the other day, and you know, he's the rules expert. And Mike Pereira was saying that once the ball's in the air, then you can't even call holding because you can't call pass interference, and then you're not going to call holding on that because there was that question about whether or not it was holding.
And you're when's the last time you saw holding on a gunner and a defender, you know, on a punt? I mean,
never.
They're hand fighting and holding one another the whole way down the field.
Exactly. So that was a big break for the 49ers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That didn't work out on that fake.
And that,
punt.
You know what? That was at that point in the game, I didn't get that call. I mean, That one made zero sense to me.
Well, it's going back to the risk versus reward, I guess. In that case, it wasn't worth it.
The ball was at the ball was at the
near midfield,
their own 40-yard line.
Yeah,
yeah. So, I don't know. That one didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Now the other play that was big that you already referenced was the Juszczyk getting hit in the head neck area by Gardner Johnson, and that was big too because that would have been a third down stop.
That was big.
It would have been
a third
down.
Stop.
Yeah. And so instead of maybe 3 points there, the Niners going for a touchdown. It led to the Bourne touchdown catch. So that was really big. The Niners took a lead there of 9 points with 9 minutes to go.
Yeah, that was a huge play. And as I said earlier, I get that they're protecting guys, but that's a hard one for the defender to, in my mind, to avoid. I mean, he's going down to hit him. You know, he's going down really to hit him low, and then the offensive player, in this case Juszczyk, is falling. that's to me, that's just it's an unfortunate one. But we will, we would take it in a heartbeat.
Well, yeah, because those calls go against you as well.
Yeah.
And then the play of the game, the play of the year, the play that everybody's talking about at 4th and 2 there in the fourth quarter, and George Kittle, you know, breaks free, but he's getting face masked by Marcus Williams, who didn't really even try to hide it. Once he had a hold of that face mask, he just kept holding on. And to me, Steve, it kind of looked like, I actually looked up the term, I forgot. I went to a rodeo once, and it looked like a rodeo bulldogger. You know, the steer wrestler. That's kind of what it looked like to me. I mean, Kittle just kept going and going for, I don't know, I guess it was about 20 yards.
Yeah, it was, I mean, that's no question play of the year. I mean, he's got two guys trying to grab for the ball. He's got one guy hanging on his face mask, and he's just wreaking havoc on all three of them. I mean, that was a legal street fight. and I mean, he's amazing. He's not going to go down. And I think Jimmy G referred to it in one of his press conferences or maybe the post game, just said like, that's how our whole team is running now. You know, it's contagious. You know, he has an interesting, Kittle that has an interesting way of getting his arm on a guy's shoulder. You know, a lot of times guys will stiff arm somebody in the face. But he has an interesting way of getting his non-carrying hand on a guy's shoulder and able to knock him off balance to gain more yards after the catch. And now I noticed Mostert doing it. It's interesting. It's rubbing off on guys, which is great.
I wanted to go through the feeling of that play too, because I mean, there's, you know, you're a quarterback, it's 2nd and 5 in the second quarter, and you may or may not execute a play, and okay, big deal. But when you get down to a play like that, 4th and 2, the game's on the line. There's so much on the line, you know, even what's going on with playoff seeding, everything. And you have to calm yourself down and you got to execute this play. And it's got to be, you have to be so confident to do it. How does a quarterback like Jimmy G do that?
You have to stay in, I know I've talked about this week. You just have to stay with your fundamentals. That play was, in my mind, was a two-way go for Kittle, where basically the defender can't be right. You know, he's running a, you know, 5-yard halfback option route, we used to call it. In that case, it's a Y option, but you know, you're kind of clearing out that zone. And if that defender is on the outside of him, he would have broken in. And you know, the defender happened to be on his left, on his right shoulder, on the inside of him, and he breaks out, and you got a first down, and then obviously a lot more with that run, and then the 15-yard penalty.
But by the way, that defender, Marcus Williams, who ended up grabbing the face mask, he's the same defensive back that was involved in the Minneapolis Miracle. I don't know if you knew that, but
oh, was he really?
Yes, the guy who went for the tackle and missed, and then the Vikings won. It's
and
the same
Vikings,
guy.
And had he gone for the interception, he would have caught it.
Exactly, it's the same guy.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, I mean that's so you're saying that you're so confident though in that play. I mean, you just know. But like you said, if the defender's a little bit further over to the right, then it could be trouble.
What I was saying was that, you know, the defender can't be, he basically can't be right, because you're giving Kittle a two-way go. And had the defender been on Kittle's outside on his left shoulder, he would have broken it in, and Jimmy would have hit him on the inside.
Oh, so he has the option to go out.
He
or
has
in.
The option of going in or out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's my take on it. I'm pretty sure that's what was called there.
Yeah. What a play.
You're giving your best receiver some field to work in. So
yeah. And he's battled. I mean, he has battled through knee and ankle and everything that's bothering him, and he has been phenomenal.
still wreaking havoc.
Yes. You know what else was big? Was the hold by Wisnowski, because it was a high snap on that game-winning field goal. He handled it. I mean, that's also clutch. And you've been a holder before, Steve. That's another nerve-wracking job when it's not a great snap.
No. He's gotten better, obviously, because I honestly think in the beginning of the season that was part of some of Robbie's issues, where, you know, he had a new snapper, he had a new holder, and just his timing wasn't right, and it's gotten better. You know, getting Nelson back as the snapper and which now he's gotten better at holding.
Is that a hard thing to get better at? You got to practice it all.
No, it's not a hard thing to get better at, but it's thousands of holds, thousands of snaps. And what else helps with that is having Nelson back, who's a better long snapper, who can dial it in depending on where he puts the laces even before he snaps it, where he knows exactly how many revolutions that ball is going to take, and those laces hit you on your right hand somewhere, so you know exactly where they are when you go to put the ball down. As I'm saying this, I think back to the best I was ever with was Mike Webster. He would say, "Okay, where the laces on your fingers, or were they in your palm?" Obviously, you know, they're better if they're on your fingers, because then you don't have to really move it at all. And he could turn the ball a little bit before he snapped and know, because he had done it for so long, that the laces would be on your fingers every time.
Yeah, interesting. Up next, the Atlanta Falcons. Now, on paper, when you say, "Oh, they're 4-9," you know, no problem. But the Falcons have actually—they've won 3 of their last 5. They won in New Orleans, and that was kind of a no-doubter win for them. They've won at Carolina in a blowout, and they beat Carolina at home last week, 40-20. So this team is definitely capable. You cannot relax on a game like this.
No, they cannot, because now we've got the one game. We're up the one game we need, and we've got to stay there. So they have Matty Ice playing quarterback. So do not let down, because he'll kill you. And he's got, I think he got Harper back, and he got Jones back.
Yeah, and meanwhile, I think you're right. Yeah, so, Julio Jones is back.
I got both those. I got Julio Jones and Harper back. So they're instantly better on offense with those two guys back. So no, we cannot let down.
And defensively, the injuries are starting to pile up a little bit, because Richard Sherman strained hamstring. He's out probably a couple of weeks. D Ford, he's out for the rest of the regular season here, the last 3 games, strained hamstring. You got other guys like DJ Jones, sprained ankle. You got Kaywan Williams, he was in concussion protocol. So these are adding up. And then on the offensive side, to lose Weston Richburg for the rest of the season with a torn patellar tendon, it's tough. This is the time of year where you do have your depth tested.
Yeah, it is. And you know, fortunately or unfortunately, we're going to have to win – I'll be 7 in a row to win the Super Bowl.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right.
It's what's going to have to be.
Yeah. Even getting help from the Seahawks losing to the Rams, it still sort of matters, but it's not 100% mattering, because you still have to beat Seattle.
I mean, even if, I don't know what's, if we both ended up at, Seattle's 10-3 now.
Yes, one game back.
If we both ended up at 13-3, if two of the 3 losses are to Seattle, they obviously win a division, and then we become a wild card, which is
number
what we're 5 talking about.
Seed. Yeah,
and then it, then we got to win, then you got to win 4 in a row. But I like the idea of winning 7 in a row and having a bye and playing at home. So, being greedy.
I don't blame you. I mean, you get to this point and you just want to do it. You want to just get it done. But still a long way to go. Got to keep people healthy, and you know that's going to be the big key.
No question. So I'm getting some of those guys back. Obviously, Richburg. No, hopefully he's healthy for next year because he's got a. That's not a good injury. Not that any injury is, but that's a long one. Hopefully we'd have Sherman. Hopefully we have D. We'll see.
Yeah. One more thing before we go. I have to throw this in because I think every week we sort of analyze Jimmy G as much as we can, you know, since you played quarterback. And especially because you think back to the preseason and the amount of criticism he was getting and people wondering if he was going to perform. And, he has just really come through for this team. I mean, you know, four touchdowns. He has come through when they have needed. Yeah, they've got
played
a great
really
running
well.
Game. But, yeah, what did you think of just this week's performance?
Oh, no, he played terrific. I don't think I would be surprised if he made many even mental mistakes in the game. He seemed to be seeing it pretty well. I think there were a few times there early on where maybe he hung on to it a little bit. Well, not very early, not right away. Right away, he was getting the ball out of his hand quickly. And I mean, at that point, like you said, we were making 16 yards a play. He came out slinging it, getting it out of his hand quickly. I thought there was a period there, maybe the beginning of the third quarter, maybe even through most of the third quarter, where he seemed frustrated. He was hanging on the ball a little bit more. And they obviously were, you know, people were covered. Took a couple sacks. I could kind of see a little bit, but he rebounded well and obviously threw the ball extremely well when they needed him to. It's hard to find fault in going, what was he, 27 for 36. I mean, yikes, what a day at the office. The one interception, should have been caught. And four touchdown throws, I mean, it was an awesome day.
Absolutely. All right, Steve, look forward to talking about this game against the Falcons next week.
Sounds good.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. I want to thank him and Greg Papa for joining us here on 49ers Extra. We'll be back with you again next Tuesday. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.